This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
For hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings. And none have been more confounding than what they call the different strokes effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver, a charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
Because it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. At the very top of the show, we played Scissor Sisters' Night Work.
Jade, this week I felt like a bit of a diva.
Yeah?
Because I splurged and I pampered myself a little. Now, what I do is it's not really every year, it's more like every year and a half.
Yeah.
I go out and I do this whole stock take thing where I buy new perfumes. Mm-hmm. Because what I've been doing for the last year and the year before is that I buy two or three perfumes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And because I spread myself, you know, with all three, they tend to run out around the same time.
Yeah.
So there's this, you know, there's this shortage of fund every year where I actually spend on perfumes. And my little brother looked at me when I made the purchase this week and he was just like, why do you need three perfumes? Why can't you just use a roll-on? hang on. I don't do roll-ons. I do eau de toilette. Thank you. But Jade, I mean, is it unreasonable to spend all this money on three different types of perfume? How many do you have?
Personally, I have one. I have one that's quite expensive. And my ritual that I've had for many years is that my mother will buy said perfume for me every year.
You trust someone else to buy fragrances and perfume for you?
Well, I obviously found the perfume that I like.
Oh, okay.
And she just purchases it because I don't want to pay for it myself.
Oh, okay, I understand. Because, I mean, scent is a very personal thing.
Yes.
I don't like buying perfumes for people unless I know exactly what they want. Mm. Because even if you know what their type is like, they might still hate it.
Yeah.
There's always subtle differences. It's very touchy scent. So I spent about $170
yep.
on three different types of perfume. I want you to sniff me. Sniff my wrist. Come.
Okay, hang on a sec.
We're just going to sniff.
All right, what do you think of that? That's a new one.
It's very florally.
It's kind of florally, but it's not.
Yeah.
This is Baby by Gwen Stefani's Harajuku Lovers Range. Now, this one, actually, the line's been discontinued. So
okay.
As soon as I saw that in the bargain bin, I freaked out. I thought, okay, I have to get this.
Yep.
So right now, I smell like talcum powder and baby wipes. That's the smell I'm going for.
Now, you do, I've noticed you do rotate because there are weeks where I say, ooh, you smell nice.
I know. I tend to not, I didn't want to like overpower you, Jade, with it because there are some fragrances that you love and you would hug me really tight and you'd tell me, you whisper sweet nothing in my ear. And I'm
you
like,
you smell really good right now.
It's like, oh, Dave, you smell really nice.
I've been single for a little bit, so.
And I feel like you're coming on to me, so I don't want to use that perfume too many times.
Yeah.
You know, the effects will be weakened.
Yes.
So it'll be more potent when I need to get something out of you. I just dabble a little behind the ears.
So you're accusing me of workplace harassment, basically.
It's not harassment if I enjoy it.
Welcome to Different Strokes Online. Log in to hear Jade and Dave's perspectives on online media.
The internet should not be used as a high-tech babysitter. We need to make sure that when our kids surf the web, they don't drown.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, I'd never heard of Nick Cage's Everyone before you came up with this thing tonight. And then I read the blog and then, of course, I went straight there to have a look.
Oh, It is hilarious, yes. Isn't it? So, look, what we're talking on the online segment tonight is this really funny blog called Nick Cage as Everyone. Now, it's a very simple mantra, and it's a very simple kind of foundation
mm-hmm.
for what this blog is about. So the author of the blog has written that this website is founded on the belief that everything in life would be better with a little more Nick Cage,
mm-hmm.
the most unique and versatile actor of his generation.
It's kind of like it's an extension of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, right?
I don't know. What's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
Okay, so the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing was effectively that you could, because you know the 6 degrees of separation thing, mm. how everyone in the world could be connected within six people.
Mm.
So they changed that concept to 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, where you could basically match Kevin Bacon with any star or other movie, you know, person, and you could say in six steps you can get from Kevin Bacon to said person. Yeah.
So they could be linked through being in movies together or
personal relationships.
Yep. That's interesting. But with Nick Cage's Everyone, it's not quite as complex.
No.
It's more about people photoshopping Nicolas Cage's face onto other celebrities or other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the list goes, it's really amazing some of the work on here, Jade.
Mm.
Photoshop awards, hand it over. Mm-hmm. Seriously. We've seen Nick Cage airbrush into Jesus's body.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Nick Cage as Hannah Montana, John Lennon and Yoko Ono. The Golden Girls, several times. A lot of people have, you know, put Nick Cage's face on the Golden Girls' body before. Things like Rick Astley, Catwoman, that was funny. And people like Oprah as well and Star Jones.
And I should point out too that this site, many years ago, I did this Photoshop job where I basically put your head onto Posh Spice and I made you into one of the Spice Girls, right? And it's not cut and paste thing, which is what I did there. I didn't, you know, they've actually blended. You cannot tell, like, unless you, in some of these cases, that if you looked really closely, that it is actually Nick Cage.
It's very subtle, yeah. Things like, I'll take Star Jones, for instance. You know, this bodacious, curvy black mama.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the photo, at one glance, you think, oh, yeah, Star Jones. But then you look closely, hang on, she's got Nick Cage's blue eyes and nose and smile and eyebrows. How creepy is that?
Yeah.
So it's all these instances where Nick Cage, being the very versatile Hollywood actor that he is,
mm-hmm.
is playing all these different people. My favorite are the gender-bending ones, like when he does Celine Dion or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like as if Celine Dion's photos aren't photoshopped enough, like put his face on it.
Well, there's some really creative ones on there. I really liked it.
Well, who do you think is a more versatile, like who do you think is another Hollywood star that's just as versatile as Nicolas Cage? In this instance.
Is Nicolas Cage versatile?
I don't think he is.
I think he plays versions of the same character.
I know, but I think that's the joke there because he's always Nick Cage in every movie he's in. He's always Nicolas Cage.
He's Nick Cage playing someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who do you think is a celebrity like that, you know, could work as a blog?
Hmm.
Like personally, I think Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
No matter what she does. And I know there are lots of Jennifer Aniston fans out there from the Friends years and possibly even after she left the show.
When she does those big rom-coms.
Yeah, those rom-coms. But in every rom-com, she is Jennifer Aniston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's the same person.
So you're going to start a blog called Jennifer Aniston?
As Everyone.
As Everyone.
Oh, I don't know if it really works. I can maybe airbrush her onto Ellen's body. That would really work.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, they're both blondes and they have blue eyes. So that's an easy start.
Yeah.
Like, I won't be airbrushing her onto Hulk Hogan anytime soon.
Now that I would like to see.
It'll be very cut and paste.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dave, you must feel so lucky to go and watch these shows that you would never have thought to watch ever before.
Look, I always go on the personal recommendation of a friend when it comes to TV shows because I'm quite loyal with the series that I watch.
Tune in for a Different Strokes take on television.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9. Dave, about maybe a year ago, I was listening to the Box Cutters podcast and they mentioned this show called Party Down.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally, at the same time, There's also another podcast I listen to. See, I get all of my stuff from podcasts, basically, called The Sound of Young America. And they had done an interview with a couple of the members of the cast of Party Down, one of which is Jane Lynch.
Which we all love.
Yeah, we all love. So this is before Glee happened, basically. Okay. So Glee had been filmed, but it hadn't actually happened yet. So basically, and so I went and watched the first season. And I've just finished watching the second season, and I just thought that it was about time that it was recently announced that it was cancelled.
Mm. At the end of the second season, or were they acts halfway through?
At the end of the second season. One of those short series, so it only normally goes like between 8 and 13 episodes.
Oh, okay.
Per season. So
give us the premise of the show, Party Down.
Yeah, so basically Party Down it's set in Los Angeles. It's your standard kind of half an hour comedy, no laughter track or anything like that.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
What's wrong with a laughter track? No, or recorded in front of a live studio audience?
It's not that. Okay. So it's like, you know, the very modern style of comedy that you're seeing, like, you know, it's got that kind of, that element of mockumentary without it actually being a mockumentary. It is obviously, you know, a fictional story, but there's six aspiring, I guess, like Hollywood actors or writer types who work for this company called Party Down, and basically they're a catering company, and they work at the, you know, at these gigs, I guess, in catering gigs to support themselves as they, you know, go for their dreams.
Hmm. Isn't a tagline like, it's a talent to show that you, to pretend like you really care or something like that?
I don't know. Is it?
Yeah, I think that's one of the taglines.
And so each episode sets up a new event. So they'll be working at a different event, and there's sort of all of these weird guests that show up, and these bizarre things happen in each episode. Some of the main stars of the show are Adam Scott, who...
I'm struggling to figure out where I've heard him from.
You will have seen him in things before. Probably the most famous thing that he's done recently was he played one of the government auditors in the last couple of episodes of season 2 of Parks and Recreation.
Oh, okay.
With Rob Lowe. And he is playing a character who was sort of, he was in this really big like commercial, and became famous because of this one catchphrase.
Oh.
And basically it's, are we having fun yet? And so and he gets sort of pigeonholed as the, are we having fun yet guy? So he's now sort of found himself, I guess, typecast or stereotyped, and he can't sort of get any jobs anywhere else.
He can't
get
any jobs. So yeah. What? He ends up in a catering
company.
So
he's working at this catering company. And so, you know, there'll often be episodes where, you know, he's working the bar, and they'll come, you know, one of the guests will come up and say, hey, you know, do I know you from somewhere? And then, of course, he kind of has this hatred as they kind of put the pieces together and start saying, hey, are you having fun yet? Yeah. Or they ask him to say it. And then there's Lizzie Kaplan plays Casey, who's a comedian who's attempting to make it. And she's probably most famous for playing Janice in Mean Girls.
Who's Janice?
Who was the alternative friend.
Oh, my God, her, Janice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is she blonde in this TV show, or does she have dark hair?
She's got dark hair.
Okay, all right. I was worried that I might not be able to pick her if she was, because I saw the poster and I saw a blonde girl in it, and I thought for a second that was Janice from Mean Girls, but no, it's not. Okay.
So Jane Lynch was in the show as Constance, who was this sort of older, still struggling actress who has like these kind of glorious stories of, you know, days when she was like in these famous things and has apparently slept with everyone. She disappears around episode 8 of season 1 and is replaced for the last two episodes by Jennifer Coolidge, who's famous for being the MILF in American Pie. And the reason that happened was because Jane Lynch was doing Glee at the time.
Oh, okay.
And Glee took off and wouldn't allow her to do both shows.
Mm.
But she does actually make an appearance in the season 2 finale.
Now, tell me, I've read that Megan Mullally is also on this show.
Yes. So she shows up in season 2 as the full-time replacement for Jane Lynch.
Okay. When you say replacement, they're not I mean, they're just different characters.
They're different
that
characters. So yep. basically, because there's...
Like, she's not putting on a blonde wig to look like Jamie.
They have to, because they have to have the six people to actually work the event or whatever.
Oh, okay. She it's comes like a shift.
In, yeah, so she comes in as the person that... And her, she plays sort of this Hollywood mum type who's got this... I think she's 11, this 11-year-old daughter, and her name's Escapade. And she's, like, desperate for her to be famous.
Escapade.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, such a lovely name for a child, hey.
It's actually, yeah, it's actually been created by one of the creators, Paul Rudd, who most people would know from the Judd Apatow movies. He was the big brother Josh in Clueless. I see you've got blank looks.
I've got, I'm you don't giving know you who blank Paul looks. Rudd is. I don't know who Paul Rudd is, and I'm probably going to get hate mail.
And the other, probably the other face you might recognise is Martin Starr, who was, he's also been in a lot of Judd Apatow films and was also in Freaks and Geeks. And he's kind of, he plays this guy that is a hard sci-fi writer.
Mm.
He, you know, of course thinks he's kind of above all of the actors. The actors are stupid and he's writing, you know, this intelligent stuff and he's not getting appreciated and all of that. So there's really good guest stars on it. Like just interesting good guest stars. Like there was an episode in season two that had, what was his name? Steve Guttenberg. Do you know? He was in... like Three Men and a Baby. I'm not going to talk about Three Men and a Baby again because the last time I tried to talk to you about that, you said you didn't know what it was.
I still don't know what it is.
Yeah, but anyways, it's kind of this really quirky series. The reason I thought it's worth mentioning is that season one has just come out on DVD here, so you can actually watch season one and season two. It's kind of got this. It's a really good kind of ensemble thing. It's not like laugh out loud funny, but it's very kind of, it's really smartly written. And
well, I like the concept of the show already because it's a unique idea, you know, taking a bunch of struggling writers and actors living in such a Hollywood culture in LA and seeing them struggle and having to make ends meet by working in a catering company. Yeah. That sounds like a riot. So it sounds like something I might jump onto, perhaps.
I think maybe you should.
You say that it's about pop artist booth character.
Pop artist booth character. Forget what you've heard. I do listen to strummy la-la music, as I like to call it.
Get ready for a Different Strokes take on music.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, I've heard you bang on about Erica Haynatz for seriously at least a good week and a half.
It's been a good week and a half, yes. I caught up with her sometime last week to have a chat about her new album called Sweet Aside, which is now in stores and available online to download.
I just want to mention before this that I became highly, like, I was feeling really self-conscious about the whole thing because your boyfriend basically suggested that you were so in love with her that you were going to ask her to be your new co-host.
That is absolutely not true. No, Jade, you are irreplaceable. Let me say it on record, on air, once and for all, before we hear from Erica, that you are irreplaceable. I'm not doing a show with another woman, not anyone else on Different Strokes.
Aww.
You see? I mean, is this what you're like if I were to so much so as talk to another woman?
Yes.
Why are you so possessive?
I'm insanely jealous. It's one of those things.
In any case, look, Erica Haynatz is, best known as a model and TV presenter.
Yeah.
Not as a radio personality, though, Jade. So there you go.
No, she's a lot more glamorous than me, so I thought maybe you'd want, you know.
Oh, but come on, we're on radio here. Like, I'm not looking glamorous. I smell good.
You know that the girls are always more glamorous than the boys in radio. Have you noticed that?
Well, if the posters and the bus stop shows that they're more Photoshopped, then yes, I'll believe that.
Okay.
I guess you're right.
Yes.
In any case, she first made her mark on music back in 2006 when she won It Takes Two, this talent TV show where they pair a celebrity with a professional pop star or singer.
Okay.
She won that series and, subsequently spent roughly about 2 years finishing her debut album. So this is her having a chat with me about it, about her songwriting experience and overcoming self-doubt and all that. So let me just get this straight. So you're not one of those people that are going out with this story of, oh, you know, I've been playing the piano since I was three. I've always wanted to sing. Is this something you discovered later in life, like almost like a career change?
No, I've definitely always wanted to sing. But as I said, for me, it's been, it feels like it's been a really natural evolution. I didn't have a stage mother. I didn't have I didn't have a mother, pouring over me, pushing me into ballet classes, doing late night cello gigs and that sort of thing. It's been something that I think, you know, has come with age, that I've developed a sense of myself, and through life experience I've developed my voice, and I've only really gathered the confidence at this age to be able to put it out there. So it's been something that I think has been a bit of a fluid progression to this point.
So when you actually went on to do It Takes Two, it was actually a gamble for you, because, like you said, you had a stable gig happening, you were already on another TV show. Was that a big risk for you? Because I remember seeing you do that, watching that on TV and going, girl, how are you going to pay the bills?
You know what, it's so funny, every time someone says, but you left a stable TV job. Sorry, no, but a stable TV job. What there is I think, for me, there's a really important part of really honouring what it is that I want to do, and honouring the passion that I have, and the passion was for music. So what appears from the outside to be a really stable job, it was a great job and it fulfilled me for those 2 years. But I think it's really important that you seek out challenge, and that you pursue the things that you love the most. And when that came up, while I didn't undertake the decision lightly, it was a very clear-cut decision for me, because I thought, this is absolutely what I want to do.
Now, on to the album, Sweeter Side, which comes out on July the 16th.
Yep.
Can I just say, I'm really loving this album.
Oh, I'm so pleased to hear it.
Yeah, I'm not just saying because you're on the phone and I follow you on Twitter and all that. I was really impressed. Like, your voice, you've got such a beautiful, warm kind of vocal tone. I love it.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to hear that. It's after so much work, and I think when you hold something so close to your bosom, when it comes to sharing it, and that's ultimately what, you know, the purpose of it. You hope that it translates, or you hope that it resonates with people, and that they do get some joy out of listening to it. So it's a pretty big thrill to hear you say that.
The thing about this album, though, that really surprised me was that it's so sincere. It really caught me off guard. Like, it's so sincere, it's unpretentious, and it's very personable.
Yeah.
So was that your intention to start off with when you went into...
Definitely. And there's lots of artists that I reference, or that I'm inspired by, and, you know, all different types of writing and performances, you know, I look to. But for me personally, as a singer, I think that I've never really strived to be abstract or cool or anything like that. But for me, my main drive is to be as simple and pure and honest in the way that I structure things, and to really sing from the heart, and hope that really gives it the lift that it needs. So, I feel really connected to the music. I think all of the content of the songs is very true to me and my life experience. So the most important thing is that people relate to it, and
absolutely
when they listen to it, yeah.
This is what I heard, right? You spent a good 2 years finishing the album, and, you know, I can see that you've written with some amazing writers and producers who, you know, done stuff on Natalie Imbruglia and Duffy's albums.
Yeah.
What were the writing sessions like for you? Like, you know, having to meet complete strangers and open up?
It's, you know, there's a part of that that's really exhilarating. It's a little bit like going out on a blind date. There's a part of it that's just, you know, bursting with excitement. You go there and you're joey-eyed and big-hearted and you're ready to get into it. And then the actuality of it is that it's often very awkward. And you're very, you know, while you think these people have all of these amazing credentials, I'm going to write a hit. It very much depends on the dynamic that you have with people, but just a basic run-of-the-mill chemistry that you have with someone. Sometimes you just don't get along. Sometimes you sit there red-faced for hours and nothing happens. But what I did experience was that there were some really amazing moments, really beautiful and very generous of spirit people that just were really, they were really able to provoke different ideas from me, and they really encouraged me, and I loved it. And I think that out of all of the different parts, that I probably enjoyed the songwriting the most, because it is the most challenging. And it means that, you know, if there's the opportunity to work with other people and generate ideas, it's a pretty electrifying experience. It's just like you never know what you're going to end up with. Sometimes it's total crap and sometimes it's magic. So you just have to risk looking the fool in front of strangers in order to get to the good stuff.
Now, one of my favourite songs on the album is called The Best. It's very bittersweet. What's the story behind that?
But for me, the song is, it's kind of very much about my initiation into this whole world of music, and how I felt about myself and the patterns of self-sabotage, and how, you know, sometimes my low opinion of myself influenced outcome. And I think just addressing that and saying, you know what, if you think about that, if you think that way, then that's what's going to happen. So, you know, it's about, you know, getting what you ask for, really.
Yeah, and has your perspective changed since writing that song and since, you know, recording the album and now you're officially on the move with promoting?
Look, I think that it's a bit of a, I think a lot of creative people could, most people could understand you, that there's always going to be a level of self-doubt, but that's also something that, you know, makes you push yourself that little bit harder. I think if you continue to question yourself and you continue to search, so there's a good part of that. But I also think that I've needed to give myself a healthy dose of optimism and make sure that there's plenty of affirmation in my life as well. And I'm responsible for that. I can't wait for other people to go, great job, Erica, you're doing an amazing, you know, you're being amazing. It's about me going, you know what, you're kicking some of your goals and you'll be fine. So it's about me being kind to myself more than anything.
You're listening to Different Strokes on Joy 94.9. That was my chat with Erica Haynatz. If you want to hear the full interview, which of course you do.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? Like, you know, that's only a portion of our chat. Like, mm-hmm. we talked about all sorts of things, like her first job and it's like really quirky stuff. Like, I even asked her, Jade, mm-hmm. if she could bring anything back into fashion, be mm-hmm. it scrunchies or happy pants.
Yes.
Which would she pick? Guess which one she picked.
Scrunchie?
No.
Happy pants.
Yes. She's all for happy pants. She was totally excited. I can tell just from the tone in her voice that she would bring it back if she could. Just with a wave of her hand, she would bring happy pants back.
I don't really want happy pants to come back.
Compared to scrunchies, yeah. Look, you know my run-in with scrunchies. The business failed, so...
You've got a thing about scrunchies.
Yeah, I do have a thing about scrunchies.
Well, I think scrunchies are a bit easier to blend.
No.
Yeah, come on.
I just can't. Not after that small business failed in primary school.
It was the big scrunchies that were the problem, Dave.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, or maybe there was it was a great scrunchie depression. That's why I wasn't selling any scrunchies.
I'm telling you, it was all about fluoros. You went with too many muted colors. That was the problem.
Yeah, that was the problem. It was the year 2000 and I was selling scrunchies. That wasn't the problem.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.